Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm very pleased to have as my guest Rob Doyle, whose new novel, Threshold, is published by Bloomsbury Books. I had the excitement of being introduced to Rob Doyle's work by a writer who lives in Los Angeles, where we taped, Rachel Kushner. She was very excited about the book, actually has a blurb on the back of it. She tells us that she forgets about how to read the novel and what kind of novel it is, and instead to love the narrator whose brilliance and humor on drugs and literature, sex and boredom and death leave me in awe. Now, what I find about Rob Doyle's book, Threshold, is that any question you ask about it has, at the very least, two opposing answers. It's one of the exciting things of the book. So let's start out, Rob. Among other things, the threshold of what?
I think you're right that it's a book of many dualities and many dichotomies. And I would throw out just a few of them. I would say it's the threshold between the known and the unknown, the threshold between, indeed, the generic threshold between fiction and nonfiction, between narrative and essay, but it's also the threshold of consciousness. And it's an intrepid kind of book. You know, this is a book with so much travel in it, so much kind of adventurism of various kinds, be it, you know, kind of chemical, pharmacological, or sexual even, or literary, intellectual. So Threshold suggests the beginning of some kind of voyage, some kind of journey. You know, this is a novel that's very nakedly, very explicitly autobiographical. You know, it very much uses, let's say, a persona of myself as he drifts through the world, you know, falling prey to or indulging numerous obsessions and fascinations. And it involves a fair amount of extremism of sensation.
I noticed that your first novel, Here Are the Young Men, is about a narrator in his 20s. And this is a narrator, Rob Doyle, in his 30s, it seemed to me, at the threshold of the rest of his life, that he's not going to go back to the extravagances that defined his earlier years. He mourns them. But like all of us who pass the age of 30, we start having responsibilities that we don't like, that we wish were not part of our lives. And in addition, he seems to be at the threshold of the end of the world.
Yeah, this being my third book now, I would say that most of my stuff has always had a kind of apocalyptic vibe going through it. In the background, it's a part of the weather. It took me maybe 3 or 4 years to write it. And as is well known, these have been very dramatic events in the external world, to put it lightly. You know, Nietzsche called one of his books, I think it was Human, All Too Human, a monument to a crisis. And this book, in a sense, was also a monument to a personal crisis. It's funny because it's a very sunny, humorous kind of book. You know, there's lots of sly humor and laughter in it, but it's also one which is, yeah, very much about this kind of reckoning with maybe the nihilism of youth catching up on a person.
Well, you're quite right. I dare my listeners to read this book without laughing out loud, and yet it's the smile on the skull. You know, it's the smile at the grave. You were a philosophy student, and you acknowledge in this book that although Kant is perhaps the great philosopher of his time, you don't like philosophy that bores you. You want philosophers like Nietzsche to excite you. And as you mention in your second book of stories, Nietzsche excites you nonstop without a break. And the other writer you talk about with some frequency is Georges Bataille. And to the extent that he is a philosopher, he's a philosopher of hysteria and death-centeredness, torture. And the third one is E.M. Cioran, whose title of his first book says it all.
On the Heights of Despair, I believe.
One of the things you point out in this book is that E.M. Cioran, as wonderful as he is, writes in a completely aphoristic, quotable style that leaves you with nothing to say. He says everything, and he says it so perfectly that you're left holding the book aghast and robbed of your right to your own opposing opinion. He was Romanian, he lived in Paris, and he wrote one calmly pessimistic book after another. They're brilliant. They're all translated into English by another writer, poet, who you mention, Richard Howard, a brilliant translator and a wonderful poet. Now tell me, is there a certain kind of book that you were led to and another kind that you turned away from?
I would say that, you know, we're all kind of driven by inclinations as readers. I feel to a degree that we don't fully choose. And I think ever since I came mm-hmm. of age, ever since I was a teenager, there's something masochistic about my reading habits. I think I came to Cioran relatively late. I didn't start reading him until my late 20s, early 30s. But when I fell for him, I fell hard. And so the third chapter of Threshold, it's called Grave, and it kind of recounts this journey to Paris shortly after the Charlie Hebdo terror attacks of 2015. I went there to, you know, research his life and to try to write. I was trying to write a book about him, or at least an essay. And of course, as you described, Michael, the great cunning final victory is Cioran's, in that he's so eloquent and so flawless in his cynicism and his mode of expression that he leaves you really not very much to say about him. And so I didn't have a book or an essay. And so the chapter became me essentially working him out of my system by kind of going to the end of this obsession with his work.
I'm 67. How old are you now?
At 37.
Okay, so when I got to college, there was a special issue of a magazine, I believe, called Triquarterly, devoted to Cioran. Uh-huh. And Susan Sontag also had a rather brief essay on Cioran, and I read him, and I couldn't stop. Same thing with Bataille. When I read Literature and Evil, I mean, I didn't think I'd ever read Wuthering Heights. It was a book that my mother wanted me to read. And then when I read what Bataille had to say about Wuthering Heights and Evil, I had to get it right away. It's one of the few perfectly dark and stricken books in the English language. Most people think of the movie. They think of it as a romantic story. Romance my foot. And one of the things that I liked so much about your new book, Threshold, is that it brings us back to what we read for. which is to encounter at a distance, but between our hands on the page of a book, the dark side of life. Somehow or other, we're living in a period of optimistic literature, and Threshold brings me back to what I love most about fiction, the fiction that tells us how not to live.
Yeah, I think one of the reviewers even made such a comment saying that it should be read as a masterclass in how not to go about your life, which I took, I think it was meant meanly, but I took it as a compliment. I've always been drawn to those authors who are out to do me in, who are out to do damage to me. And I guess even though I have I love to entertain, I love to, you know, I want to kind of invite the reader in and give them a great experience. But at the same time, I'm very much concerned with confronting something in the reader, too. My books have always had that quality, I think, where it's not going to be a ride that you get off scot-free. There's always, it's going to exact a toll on you. If only by me confronting my own worst doubts, torments, fears, obsessions, that I can somehow provoke that in the reader, confront them with it.
In your last book, which was a book of short stories called This Is the Ritual, you introduce us to a set of imaginary writers, all of whose lives are destroyed by the attempt to write or the belief that they can. And it's a fascinating book. And when the baton is passed to the new book, Rob Doyle, who is the narrator, is finding out that although he can be funny, and indeed very funny, one of the funniest contemporary writers, that laughter is bitter laughter when it's at its best. It's the laughter that was introduced to us perhaps by Voltaire, but certainly people, even people who read Don Quixote, even Vladimir Nabokov, are overwhelmed by its cruelty. Cruelty is at the essence of laughter because in addition to laughing with, there's laughing at.
Yeah. I would say that much of the laughter in this book is laughing at, but it's laughing at myself. I think a lot of the cruelty has been self-directed in this book, somewhat less so in the prior books, but also in those too. I agree. I think a lot of my own favorite authors, you know, even when I was much younger, you know, in my early to mid-20s, Martin Amis was a very big deal for me. You know, he was one of those transformative and formative writers for me. And he takes that Nabokovian kind of laughter in the dark to its extreme, I feel. It's deeply uncomfortable and deeply, deeply funny. You know, laugh out loud funny, kind of tears streaming down your face funny, but profoundly unsettling at the same time. So I find myself quite naturally sliding into that tradition. You know, in This Is the Ritual, there was a kind of Rob Doyle character who would weave in and out of those stories. But with Threshold, I took that tendency to its you know, logical culmination, really, and called the narrator Rob Doyle. So I kind of stripped away that last line of defense, you know, that protective layer, the safety helmet of overt fiction, which is not to say that there aren't fictional strands or elements within Threshold. There are, but I've kind of done that thing whereby I invite the reader to believe that it's all a verbatim, you know, transcript of everything that happened and everything I felt and experienced.
In Threshold, you're plunging into what they're calling autofiction nowadays. Do you believe in autofiction or is it something else?
You know, I don't really, or at least I don't believe in the term, or I tend never to use the term. I think, you know, as I suspect you'll agree with me on this one, but what now in the last few years has been called autofiction is something that's been around forever, since at least since Henry Miller, but no doubt before that too. And I think It would not interest me in the slightest if I were to think, now there's this genre called autofiction, and I'm going to try to write inside it. Everything that I've ever written has evolved naturally to be that way. And so the fact that I ended up writing my third book in such an overt autobiographical way, and the fact that it's about a writer, you know, wandering more or less disastrously through the world and trying, often failing to write books, it wasn't exactly a conscious choice. It was just an evolution to happen that way. I feel that even, you know, my first book, Here at a Young Man, it was a very classical first novel in lots of ways. It was the Buildings Roman. It was a coming of age story, and it was about, you know, young guys in Dublin getting kind of nihilistic kicks from drugs and going off the rails and so on. But it had all of the traditional elements of the first novel and of conventional fiction. You know, there were characters with made up names, and they had, you know, there was a plot and so on. But already that book was, you know, very drenched in very, I think most people knew it was drenched in autobiographical flavorings, let's say. And that's just something that's, but I remember when I published that book, you know, I would go and do interviews, and all of the interviewers would ask me basically which character was I, or, you know, how much of it really happened. And even if I tried to demur and say, you know, it's fiction, and they would push it and they would insist. And so I think part of me realized that, God, no, even if you do want to disguise it as fiction, in the 21st century, nobody really believes you anyway. So you may as well have fun with that. And you may as well, again, drop the mask.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm on KCRW. I'm talking with Rob Doyle about his new novel, which I find marvelous and funny and dark. It's called Threshold. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. And I'm talking with Rob Doyle about his new book, Threshold, a darkly funny, weirdly optimistic, compulsively readable celebration of the nightmare of perception and desire. Now, in this book, the narrator, although it is told as an I book, is constantly revealing how much he fails to know about himself. Sometimes he finds himself not desirable by women, and other times he seems like the most desirable person in all of Europe. And you alternate in a kind of frenzied manner between the rejection of the self and the embrace. What gave you such an unusual strategy?
God, good question. In writing this book, you know, early on when I was writing kind of these trips, these voyages and so on, and accounts of places I had gone to and investigations I undertook there, you know, after writing a couple of those, I realized that I had packed into a voice that I would be able to channel over, you know, a couple of years, over a few years, and make a whole book from, and that I could see this panoramic view opening up in front of me. But the voice that emerged was one that I felt instinctively, intuitively, was capacious enough to hold in it all of my, at times, warringly contradictory impulses, tendencies, preferences, desires, all of that stuff. And so you can have the one narrator who, like, as you, you know, at times feels like absolute, you know, piece of dirt, and at other times feels like you know, the king of the world, and he's kind of constantly oscillating between the two. And again, I think a lot of the humor comes from that.
I want to point out to listeners, you may be hearing noises in the background. That's because during this period of quarantine, I'm taping my show in an apartment. My guest is in his home in Dublin, and so we're dealing with things as they present themselves. Now, one of the things in Threshold is that the book begins with a relatively innocent drug. That's magic mushrooms, which one could pick in Phoenix Park, a park which, by the way, plays a significant role in Finnegan's Wake. By the end of the book, we're talking about the kind of hallucinogen you find in ayahuasca, but by moving deeper and deeper into the possibilities of hallucination, the book is also simultaneously exposing the depths of reality. In this book, what is the relation between hallucination and reality?
I guess, psychedelics have a lot of meanings and functions in the book. And one of them, it strikes me, is that they're a kind of almost a formal metaphor for some of the strategies, the formal strategies in the book, in that they're boundary dissolving. They're, you know, there's this kind of lysergic fluidity between genres, between reality and fiction and so on. But on a more literal level, they are objects of desire and fascination for the narrator, as, of course, they have been in my own life. I think this is kind of an old-fashioned quest kind of book in lots of ways. You know, it's almost it's almost that very old-fashioned, unfashionable thing of a book about someone who's seeking something, who's on a mission, who's on a quest for some sort of meaning, some sort of transcendence, some sort of significance to life that transcends the mundane, the everyday, the capitalist work world, and so on. By the final chapter in his investigations with DMT and ayahuasca, something happens which doesn't exactly lead to hard, fast answers and strict conclusions, but something is opened up, a new potential, a sense of possibility, a sense of a new questioning has opened up. And I think that insofar as this book kind of culminates in a quite, especially by my standards, a quite optimistic or positive tone or place, it's related intimately to the metaphysically, spiritually, personally, intellectually challenging properties of certain psychedelic substances.
I'm talking to Rob Doyle. He's the author of Threshold. The book excited me because, you know, as I said, I'm 30 years older than Rob, and so sometimes you feel, at my age, 67, that you're not getting the news of what young people are doing. And as we know, the news of what young people and what the very old are doing is the most important news we can get. And so this novel thrilled me. Its cover is completely appropriate. It's the cover in which a frame is trying to be put around something as vast as the ocean, something that can't be framed. And the excitement of this book had something to do with it having more energy and more comedy and more direness than you can find in your everyday novel. Last year, Rob Doyle wrote weekly reviews, sometimes only a paragraph long, sometimes much more, of his 52 favorite books. We share many similar tastes, and it was very satisfying to me to find The Colossus of Morosi, for instance, at the end of the list, and the Ciaran that we were talking about before, that the books that the brilliant young read have not changed all that much. There are some new ones, but the standards, it's like finding a jukebox that has all of your favorite songs on it. For me, Rob Doyle's novel Threshold is like that jukebox. I loved it. It felt brand new and classic at the same time. Thank you for joining me, Rob.
Thanks so much, Michael, and thank you for that very generous compliment.
Once upon a time, when I was the age you were when you started out, I did not like the great majority of the books I read. Now, reading itself is such a pleasure. Passing my eyes from left to right and then again from right to left across a page. I wish I read Chinese. My eyes would love to go up and down. But it's itself a physical joy. And that's what my program Bookworm, for better or worse, celebrates. All sorts of people who are younger find books to dislike. I want to find books like yours that I can love.
Yeah, well, again, thank you. And great to get such an accolade. And of course, one of the things about this book is it too is a celebration of the passion for the written word, a passion for literature, even if, or maybe especially if, it's a damaging, disturbing passion.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, always available. Also, it's available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It airs twice a week in Berlin. You can even listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Thank you very much, Rob. I hope we'll talk together about your next book face-to-face and soon.
I hope so too, Michael. It was a great pleasure, and I hope you're well in your quarantine over there. And like you say, I hope to come visit you for real sometime.
Special thanks to co-producer Sean Sullivan, associate producer Alan Howard, engineer Paul Smith, and technical director Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Donate during KCRW's Critical Service Fundraising Drive. We need you now. Go to kcrw.com/give.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.